You are Locked On Sooners, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma Sooners. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey, Sooner fans, welcome to the Locked On Sooners podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm your host, David Walker, a former Sooners offensive lineman, former college basketball coach, and also co-host of the Iron Horse podcast with former Dallas Cowboy Brandon Carr. You can follow me on Twitter at D_walk74. And today, we got a big episode coming up. We're trying something new. We're going to let the hair down. We've got the Players Lounge coming to you here on Locked On. I've got four former teammates lined up. We're about to dive into it. Before I get to that, I do want to acknowledge that Oklahoma just got one more huge transfer from the Tennessee pipeline. We hope nobody shuts that pipeline down because it's flowing. It's flowing straight into Norman with another elite player in Eric Gray, big-time running back out of Tennessee coming to Norman. So stick around for tomorrow's episode. We're going to have Josh Ward of Locked On Vols come back on with us. We dialed up the Big Orange transfer hotline for the third time in the last few weeks to bring Josh on to talk about this newest volunteer turned Sooner in Eric Gray. And tomorrow we'll also have Jimmy Stein from Locked On Bama, Alabama basketball team coming into Lloyd Noble Center on Saturday. So check out tomorrow's episode to get a perspective on Eric Gray and also a preview of OU and Bama at Lloyd Noble. But tonight, man, we're going to bring on a familiar face to the podcast or familiar voice to the podcast in former San Diego Charger, former national champion at Oklahoma, Wes Sims. Wes, what's going on, man?
Not much. Thanks for having me, brother.
Man, like I say, dude, people always want more Wes Sims, man. We bring you on once a week, every other week.
Oh, gotta get it.
Yeah, the DMs are hopping. Bring us more Wesley, bring us more of Wesley of the Sims from Weatherford, USA.
And yeah, Wesley Oliver Sims, first and only.
Gosh, that sounds so distinguished. So many syllables when you say it that way, too.
Just get it over with.
You can go two, or you can dress it up and just go the full three names, extra syllables. We dig it. But Wes, man, we got like a full offensive line squad tonight. We got five deep, and this is the first time that the five of us are going to be in the same place at the same time since probably like 2004. So that's kind of wild to say out loud. That makes me feel old. I know it makes you feel old because you're older than me. So I'm just going to let that sit right there. And now we're going to bring in another former guest on the podcast. You've heard from recently. He was a part of our Bob Stoops tribute show when Coach Stoops got announced into the Hall of Fame. We're going to bring on John Flynn, who is a former Sooner, walked on, earned a scholarship, went on to coach under Coach Stoops at Oklahoma, then went to become the South Dakota State offensive line coach. And these days he works with me recruiting doctors down here in Dallas. So Flynn, man, what's going on, brother?
How's it going, man? Appreciate you having me back.
Yeah, man, it's like been like, what, about 5 hours since I talked to you last here in Dallas. But, hey, welcome to the show, my man. Welcome to the show.
Good to be here. I'm looking forward to it.
So we're gonna be talking about a lot of stuff on this podcast. We got a lot of memories to catch up on. We want to give you guys a little bit of inside look about what it looks like to be an Oklahoma Sooner, share some memories from our career, our time at Oklahoma. And to do that now, we got Wes, we got John. Now we're going to start bringing some athletes on this podcast, right? I mean, not to understate Wes, because listen, when I first saw Wes Sims, I mentioned this before, Wes Sims was like chiseled out of stone for a high school offensive lineman. And then there's, you know, myself and Flynn, we were walk-on guys. But now we got the quarterback turned offensive tackle, Chris Mesner, Frederick, Oklahoma special, currently coaching football at Ulaga. Mesner, all Big 12, right tackle. What's up, my man?
D-Walk, thanks for having me on, man. It's good to talk to you guys again. It's been a while.
Well, it has been a while. It's been too long, honestly. I know we've got to catch up a little bit over the years, but it's fun to just sit here and hang out virtually. Be more fun if we were sitting on a patio somewhere, enjoying some fresh air, burning down a cigar, something of that nature. But here we are on a Zoom call, making it work. And now let's bring on our only non-Oklahoman. And the most distinguished among us all, man's got a salt and pepper beard that would just make you jealous. I mean, real jealous. And listen, if you haven't heard, this man also played in a Super Bowl. All right. He came to Oklahoma from California as a tight end, had an incredible play as a tight end that a lot of people will remember, and we're going to talk about it later on the show. But let's bring on Chris Chester, former center and offensive lineman. What's up, Chess?
David, appreciate it. You know, the honor is all on, you know, this side of the internet. You know, you guys are some of the most entertaining and funniest people I had the pleasure to be around. So I'm excited to be here with you guys. Looking forward to just talking with you guys.
We're happy to have you with us. So thank you for bringing your NFC championship self to the table. You know, you got to play in the big game. We all got to sit there and watch you. So thank you, my man, for coming on with us. But listen, all right, let's just kind of roll into this. All right. So we're going to let the hair down. Like I said, we have no script. So this is something new. If you're a regular listener, you know, we talk about the latest news and notes on Oklahoma sports, and we bash Texas when appropriate, which is always appropriate. So, I mean, we could do a little bit of that every day, but to start off, we're going to go around and just kind of talk about how everybody got to Oklahoma. And Chester, while we got you on, man, like I said, you're the only guy here on the pod that was not a Sooner growing up or not an Oklahoman growing up. So how did coming to be a Sooner come about for you?
Yeah, I think about my experience. So you guys may not know this, California, for all the talent that comes out of California, there's been a lot of good California Sooners, you know, come through Oklahoma. It's not a state where the kids are playing football their whole life. You know, I was kind of a basketball player growing up and then played football when I got to high school, and, you know, things just kind of went well for me. And I was, you know, I was fortunate enough to be in a position where I could get a scholarship. And I remember Chuck Long, you know, our good friend Chuck Long coming up to Tustin High School, also known as Toughskin High School. That's kind of an inside joke if you're familiar with Jonathan Hayes, shout out. He came out, and it's kind of seemed like the perfect storm. You know, Oklahoma was kind of on the rise. They ended up winning the national championship the year before I arrived, and it was, you know, they were just hot. It was exciting. It was fun, you know, and there was the energy about it. It was an energy that I didn't get in California, to be quite honest, for, you know, my high school. I think my high school had six guys at one point all playing at the NFL at one time. We had a talented group, won a bunch of games. It just, the energy didn't match. The energy was just something different when I got to Oklahoma, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. And, you know, I went a little bit more, couldn't get enough, got a taste of it on my visit. And I was, you know, I was ready to be a part of it. And that's what kind of brought me in. And I love California, but Oklahoma, hands down, will always have a place in my heart. It was really cool. It was just something so new, so different, so inclusive, so embracing, so loving. I'm glad I got to be a part of it.
So catch us up on this for a minute. So you came in as a tight end, and ultimately, kind of midway through the career, move over to the offensive line, play some center, play some guard, and then go on to be, at the time, now I know Adrian Peterson, he keeps playing. He might be playing 5 years from now, for all we know. So he's going to keep on playing until he's done, I guess. But at a time, when you finished your career, you were the longest tenured NFL player that had come from Bob Stoops' program that played under Bob. So what was that transition like for you, going from tight end to guard, and how did that all come about?
Yeah, you know, If I could go back and put myself in the modern recruiting kind of like structure, I came in as a tight end. If I could go back, I would probably have been better classified as like an athlete, right? You know, I was a basketball player that I played tight end in high school. I was a great blocker. I hadn't played a whole lot of football though, so I don't know that I really had a clearly defined position. And so, you know, that being said, like coming from high school, I was a blocking tight end, right? You know, I was a good athlete, had some explosive plays, which I think got my attention for me. But, Yeah, I was always a blocker, in high school we were a double wing team. We were a blocking mentality team. You know, our whole motto in high school was we're double wing, so it's 10 guys block so one guy can run. Like, we had the quarterback would pitch the ball to running back and go kick out the corner. Like, everybody was blocking. So I was all in on that blue collar mentality, and I think it just, like, offensive line was what it was, and it made the most sense to me. It felt the best to be part of a group, like kind of a selfless group, and it just kind of stuck with me. It really hit home for me. So the transition, I guess, the hardest part of the transition, like Mesner can attest to this, was like gaining weight. That's the hardest part, because I was a little skinny, scrawny basketball player trying to like block too. Yeah.
Well, I
got heartburn just thinking about that.
All those peanut butter and jelly sandwiches Mess used to have to eat for our meetings. Wilson making bring PBJs to practice. And we're all, us fat guys, we're over there like, man, why don't we get to eat a little something? We have to be encouraged, you know?
NCAA rules, baby.
Touche.
Player safety.
Yep. Yeah, something like that.
What's the first word in Big 12, Messner?
Yeah, you heard that before. We'll be back with more here from the Players Lounge on Locked On Sooners. But first, I want to tell you about rockauto.com. Look, when you got to get some auto parts, it can be overwhelming. And chain stores, well, they've got different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers. But rockauto.com's prices are the same for everybody and are reliably low. Rockauto.com always offer the lowest prices possible rather than changing prices based on what the market will bear, just the same way airlines do. RockAuto.com is for everybody. It doesn't require a membership or an account login. RockAuto.com is a family business. They're serving auto part customers online for over 20 years. So go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. And make sure when you go to RockAuto.com, write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us section so they know we sent you. Again, amazing selection, reliably low prices. All the parts your car will ever need at rockauto.com. Get more of the sports news you need in less time with our new Locked On Today podcast. Peter Bukowski hosts Locked On Today, a daily podcast breaking down the biggest stories with analysis from our local experts. Start your day with all the sports news you need in under 20 minutes. Subscribe to Locked On Today wherever you get podcasts. And now, let's get right back into our conversation at the Players Lounge.
I'll never forget leaving weigh-in one morning, driving behind Mez after you had eaten all that McDonald's. I'll never forget it. I'm following Mez home early one morning after weigh-in, and I kid you not, he had eaten so much McDonald's before the weigh-in to get his weight up that my man sticks his head out the window and pukes on Lindsay Street. I kid you not. I'm driving behind him at the light. Yeah. And I'm like, oh my goodness, dude, are you all right? It was the funniest thing. I mean, just Ralphed McDonald's everywhere. And I was
That was probably about $20 worth of McDonald's too from the dollar menu. So put it in those times. I mean, that's a lot of food. Now today that's probably like a couple burgers or whatever, but like money wise, I had to put some money down on that. And I weighed in.
I went further for you, by the way.
Yeah, I made my weight, and then I weighed right after I threw up. I lost 10 pounds.
So tell us. Oh, man. Okay, so, Mess.
Start it all over again.
Talk about that for a minute, though. So you come in as a quarterback, and I remember you and I came in the same time. We were on the camp circuit together, and you were doing O-line stuff. But then we're, like, hanging out on the side, and you're like, oh, I play quarterback in high school. I'm thinking, like, what the heck are you – quarterback, and you're out here doing this stuff with us. Like, why would you be doing this stuff with us? I'd be throwing the ball, I'd be slinging it until they told me I had to stop. I'd be doing anything other than put my hand in the ground if I were you. Now, you guys talking about coming in as athletes, some of us don't really relate to that, having to put on weight, being athletes, and all that. But for you, how did that weight gain come about? And I mean, we all sitting here on the podcast, we all remember, you know, Kevin Wilson putting the onus on you to put that weight on, but what was that like, and what was that process?
Well, that process started early. I got recruited by Mangino, and so he told me, he's like, hey, you're going to be a developmental guy, you're going to redshirt, you need to start gaining weight. I was like, okay, well, how do I do that besides just lifting. Well, every coach I talk to is eat as much as you can until you're tired, and then just keep eating and working out. So, but what really kicked it in for me is when I finally got to OU. I got on campus, started working out. And, you know, first I'd never worked out like at Schmitty, like that was never in the realm of a work of a high school workout for me. So once I got there and really started putting in the time, my gains really started to come about, but it was still really, really hard. Because I could eat all that food, but I'd immediately burn it. My metabolism was going like crazy. So for that first summer, for me to finish the summer 30 pounds heavier was a huge thing for me. But I can attribute it to just, you know, Metrex shakes, a bunch of food, and working out. And yeah, I mean, that's basically the formula. Eat as much as you can and work out as hard as you can, and it'll come.
So on the weigh-in, though, you had to come in and weigh in how often during the week? And what was the consequence if you didn't make it?
So Coach Wilson came up with this brilliant idea. And Chesty got in on this, too, if I'm not wrong. Chris Bush got in on the same thing. And it was, you have to gain a pound every other day. And if you don't, you're going to do 500 push-ups. And which, by the way, is no, that didn't happen.
Yeah.
I got to like 50 and I was like, what? And he just stood there and waited. He just wanted to see us suffer, basically. But it was all in good fun. It makes for some fun memories. But yeah, no, I even resorted to, we had weight vests and the weight pants that had those little weights in them. And people would like start tossing them outside trying to, you know, shed weight. And like, you'd see them down in the drain and stuff like that. So I'd start snatching them. So I finally got enough to like tape together a brick of like 5 or 6 pounds. And if I was really short that day, man, it'd be in my girdle. So
he was a mule for like weights.
Is that a brick of weights in your pocket? Yes, it is.
Classic. Well, now Flynn, man, so you came in a few years before Mez and I, and we're gonna get to Wes of the old dog. We'll get to him next, but Flynn, you came in a little differently than the other two. Talk about your arrival in Norman, and you also were a guy trying to put on some weight, getting bigger throughout your time there as well.
Yeah, same. So what a lot of people don't know probably about me is I didn't start out at OU. I actually signed with Southeastern Oklahoma State University right out of high school and went there in the fall of 2000, and that was a good deal. But to be honest with you, that wasn't really my idea of college football after, you know, a couple of months of being there, because I had grown up an Oklahoma kid and, you know, I went to OU games growing up and, you know, that was my idea of college ball. And coincidentally, and I know, you know, Wes, you're on this call. I was back. And so I grew up in Anadarko and I was back one weekend in Darko, and the mighty Weatherford Eagles were rolling into town to play Anadarko, and I wanted to go to the game. And anyways, I went and I can't remember. And see, so in a little bit of context too, I've known Wes Sims since we were little kids. I mean, junior high, we used to play ball against each other when we were little. We used to go to track meets together and throw shot and disc and hang out. So I've known Wes for years and years at this point. And of course I knew Wes was at OU. Well, somebody had mentioned to me, it was like, hey, you know, Wes Sims is over on the Weatherford side. And I was like, hey, I'm gonna go say hi. So Wes, I don't know if you remember this or not, but I remember coming around and sitting down, shooting the breeze with you. And in fact, I think I set the whole rest of the game on the Weatherford side. And I remember just talking to Wes about, you know, being at OU. And of course, at that point in time, OU was winning. Wes, I think you were redshirted. Yeah. And we, you know, we just got to talking ball, and Wes had planted a seed in my head. He was like, man, he's like, you should just transfer and walk on at OU. And I had never really thought of it at that point. I mean, I kind of had, but not really. And I was like, man, you know, you're right. Because at that point, I was kind of having my doubts about being at Southeastern. Not that it's a bad school. It's just that, you know, it just, there was something unsettling in me. And so I kid you not, I went home that night, started thinking about it. And then wound up making the decision to transfer to OU. And so did that in January of 2001 and, you know, went through kind of the normal process like everybody else, like, you know, got a hold of Coach Merv Johnson. Y'all remember Merv?
He was kind of
running the walk-on program then. And so went to go see Coach Merv and he pointed me in the right direction. This is probably a story for later, but I remember my very first workout ever with OU football was coaches stations on a Tuesday morning. And I know y'all know about that. So, holy smokes. Like, Mez, you talk about, like, you've never done anything.
You killed
in high school.
You crushed it.
I killed myself.
You crushed it.
I was having some second thoughts, man, within about 15 minutes of that coaches stations. But no, that's how I wound up at OU. And you know, one of the best decisions I ever made was walking over to the Weatherford side. So,
you're welcome.
Yeah. And what a natural segue to bring in Wes as his let him tell his spiel of how he arrived in Norman. We'll be right back with more from the Players Lounge, but I want to tell you about betonline.ag. Look, are you ready for some more football? We got one more big game coming up. All right, it's almost over. We still got the big daddy of all games coming up. My guy Chris Chester that's on the podcast today, he's played in this game. It's the Super Bowl. It's Tom Brady, Patrick Mahomes. And if you want to get in on the action, there's only one place that's got you covered, one place we trust. That's betonline.ag. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and use the promo code LOCKEDON for your 50% welcome bonus. You can also bet on college basketball, NBA basketball, the National Hockey League. They got it all. So don't sit on the sidelines any longer. Get in on the action and don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON to receive your 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. BetOnline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. And now I want to tell you about Built Bar. This is the best tasting protein bar on the market, and it's not even close. Take it from me, I'm a former Sooners offensive lineman. I like to eat. I know what kind of food tastes good. And when it comes to protein bars, look, I like to lift. I like to eat. I love sweets. I've tried them all. Some of them, you got to just force them down to make them work. This ain't like that. This is legit. This really does taste like a candy bar. It's 100% covered in chocolate. They've got fantastic flavors like cookies and cream, almond, which to me, just like the candy bar that you've grown up eating, some of them taste just like, I'm not going to drop name brand candy bars out here, but let me just tell you, they have a variety pack, comes with 18 different flavors, cherry Barcia, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake. Cherry Barcia is one of my favorites. It's like a chocolate covered cherry. You can't go wrong with these things. It's like cheating. I feel like I'm cheating. I cut off sweets for the new year. Built Bar is getting me through. 18 grams of protein, 4 grams of sugar, or 17 and 5, depending on the flavor that you go with. Calories range from 130 to 180. The non-nut flavors are all 130. It's a good deal, man. And if you go to the BuiltBar.com, use the promo code LOCKEDON, you get 20% off of your first order. So again, BuiltBar.com, LOCKEDON as a promo code. Make sure you get that 20% off. And go check out Built Bar. I assure you, you will not be disappointed. If you're looking for more content and more coverage on the Big 12 Conference, look no further than Locked On Big 12 with our guy Josh Neighbors, who brings you daily Big 12 news at Locked On Big 12. So go follow Locked On Big 12 wherever you get your podcasts. They'll catch you up to speed on everything going on in the Big 12. And now, let's get right back into more at the Players Lounge. As Wes Sims shares his story of how he arrived in Norman, and later, we all share our story of our first impressions, our first memories, the horror stories of working out under Jerry Schmidt and the brutal strength and conditioning program. You won't want to miss that. Let's get right back into it with Wes.
Oh, man, I grew up an OU fan, and I'd wavered a little bit through high school once I finally started talking to, like, all the colleges and everything. And every time I went somewhere, they tried to sell me as the best thing ever. And I thought about Texas for a minute. I thought about Nebraska for a minute and Arkansas. And I didn't really want to get too much further away because it was just mom at the house at that point. So I didn't want to, you know, all the outside schools, I just kind of shut all them off. So Nebraska and Texas was about the farthest I was willing to get away from home. So After that, I mean, I just kept sticking around OU, and then when Bob and everybody showed up, it was kind of over from there. I knew that something was going to change in a good way. You know, everything was great with Blake and everything, but you know, we all saw the direction it was going, especially the guys that grew up in Oklahoma. So, you know, seeing some young, fresh coaches come in from outside when, you know, Bob was having all that success down in Florida and everything, it really kind of made it an easy decision for me.
Very cool. Well, so for myself, I grew up an Oklahoma fan as well, growing up in Fort Gibson. Nobody at our school had ever, you know, as I was growing up, nobody had played at the Division I level, like, you know, in the big time, quote unquote. And the Sooners were down, right? Like you mentioned, Coach Blake, those years, I remember going to games with our FCA. We go up and watch them play, get beat every time we go watch them. And Seth Luttrell was from Muskogee, which is right across the river from Fort Gibson. And I remember watching them play Nebraska. And Seth Luttrell, they beat us like 70-21. But I hung in there to see if Seth was going to get 100 yards, which he did. And I felt like, man, that was really cool. Seth Luttrell got 100 yards. We got beat by 50, but that was Oklahoma football. But my dream was like, I want to do that. But at the time that I started dreaming it, we weren't any good. And then by the time I actually was trying to do it, we're defending national champions, basically. And but it got a lot harder, right? But Teddy Lehman was 2 years older than me. You know, we played against you, Wes, in the state championship game. We're not going to say that score on the air, but you can go look it up if you want to look up the 1999 state championship game. I'll just say we didn't win. But
it's out there.
It's out there. It's out there somewhere. We're not going to do the legwork for you. I'm not going to. And I'll mute Wes if he tries to. But we take the L, but Teddy goes on to play at Oklahoma. And now all of a sudden it was like more tangible to me. Like, okay, somebody from Fort Gibson can go and do this. And Teddy, you know, plays as a true freshman. Y'all win the national title. My senior year of high school, he's doing the thing with Roy Williams in the Cotton Bowl, the big touchdown, you know, one of the greatest plays of all time. And I was actually on an Oklahoma State recruiting visit. I'm watching that in the lounge with the players before the game. Teddy picks that pass off and runs the end zone. My dad and my brother, we jump up high-fiving each other and stuff. It's like super awkward. It's kind of like, that's why Oklahoma State didn't work out for me. But ended up turning some stuff down to go play at Oklahoma. It's kind of like what Flynn was saying. To me, coming out of high school, the offers I had, JUCO, D2 stuff, it just didn't seem like the football I had envisioned for myself. And so for me, I needed to prove to myself that I could do it and get to that level and play for the Sooners. So I took the walk-on path as well. Ultimately getting with Coach Merv and going through that whole, you know, the preferred walk-on deal. But I had Bubba Burcham on the podcast a few months back to talk about the 20-year anniversary of the national title and all that. But Bubba Burcham was actually instrumental for me because I came up, Wilson had just got the job. Mangino had left for Kansas and Wilson was there, and he was kind of friendly to walk-ons because if y'all remember, he walked on North Carolina. So he set me down in the office and was like, I was going to sign with NEO because Jeremy Shockey had just come from there. And I was like, hey, that's kind of a cool, you know, they got some lineage there. They're putting guys out. And Wilson said, hey, if you come here, unless you're a five-star can't miss guy out of JUCO, you're going to be walking on 2 years from now anyway. And I was kind of like, oh, dang, you know. And then Bubba was a GA. So Bub takes me around, drives me around campus. And he's like, hey, listen, man, I've seen you on film. Like, you can play here. You can come here. You're going to redshirt, but you can come here and you can play. You can get on the field here. And I was like, that little shot of confidence, that little, like, putting a little belief in my mind was kind of the nudge I needed. Because, he had done everything we were wanting to do, right, Flynn, as a walk-on. Like, he had come,
sure,
earned a scholarship, was a captain, wins a national title. So I'm like, well, okay, if he believes I can do it, let's do it. And things worked out pretty well. But for the bigger picture, I think all of us, you know, we all have different backgrounds. But one of the cool things, and I guess it was probably, like, what, 3 or 4 years ago, Flynn, we were sitting on your back patio. Wes, you weren't there with us that night, but we had the Chesters, the Mesners, the Flynns, the Walkers. We're sitting around the back patio 15 years later, hadn't seen each other in over a decade. We got our kids playing pickup football in the backyard. Our wives are in the living room hanging out. We're sitting on the back patio just shooting the breeze. Like, that to me was one of the things, like, all that we'll talk about a lot of the behind-the-scenes stuff and the Schmitty stories we're going to get to in a minute, but that to me was what made playing at Oklahoma really worth it, too. It's just the football side's cool, but like the things you go through with your teammates make all the other stuff worth it.
I agree. That easily, I go back to that time we were all kind of hanging out, and it was actually kind of coincidental. It was OU Texas weekend, and I remember talking to Mez, and Mez was like, hey man, we're coming down. And by that time, like, Chester, I think you had just retired and you had moved to Frisco. And of course, David, you and I had been together for a year or two, and I just thought, man, this is a no-brainer. Like, we all need to hang out. And if it's easily, in my opinion, one of the coolest memories I have is just seeing our kids play in the backyard. You know what I mean? That was really neat.
You know, David, just hearing you say that, I kind of realized this, you know, as someone coming from outside of Oklahoma, right? You guys are all native Oklahomans, right? But there was some there. I know there's other people. There's other people and other programs that love their program and they value it. But I don't. It always feels different when I've come across like Oklahomans talking about Oklahoma, the University of Oklahoma, right?
Yeah.
It just always feels different. Whatever that means, I don't know if that means anything because
It means we didn't have professional sports in our state growing up.
Every Oklahoma kid thinks they can and will be on that program, and that makes a difference. I think it kind of speaks to the identity of OU.
I know we all did, or we wouldn't be on here.
Right? No, seriously, we're having this conversation because of that. You know.
Well, yeah. You know, I remember back talking about that, just talking about brotherhood and stuff. I remember it was our first week in the Switzer Center working out and summer workouts. And, yeah, usually the new guys get the brunt of it all. But when you get there and you realize you're in the thick of it with everybody else and a guy like Brandon Everidge comes up to you and you haven't – I mean, you've seen him play – but you've never said a word to him, and he's like, "Hey, you're Chris Mesner, or hey, you're David Walker, man. You know, it's good to have you here." And like from that point on, like just how accepting everybody was. I gotta say that to me, you don't get a lot of that in the real world. Nobody's as accepting as the brothers that we have at OU. Yeah. And I gotta say, it looks like they're continuing that on. It makes me proud.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I'd say, man, after some a new guy shows up, man, as soon as you go through that first off-season workout together, you realize, we're gonna go through some things.
Oh, yeah.
We're gonna see some things. We're gonna do some things.
You know this.
And it's time to get real, get behind the scenes, talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly of being a part of the Sooners strength and conditioning program under the watchful eye of Bob Stoops, Lieutenant. His first in command, Jerry Schmidt, affectionately known or not so affectionately known as Schmitty, who strikes fear in the heart of everyone, including myself, as I say his name out loud. Wes and I were on the pod the other day together, and I mentioned, I called him Jerry, guys, just kind of in casual. I was like, you know, Jerry, and I was like, whoa, is that okay? Was that okay? Yeah. It startled me, you know, like, am I grown enough to call him that? I don't feel it. I don't feel that. But let's start
I
with
felt
you.
Like I heard his little rape whistle faintly off in a distance.
Oh. Wes, you were the first one to arrive. Okay. You arrived after the first legendary year of the weeding out of everybody. Basically, it pretty much weeded out probably half the team when they first arrived. But you were there. Yeah. You came in right before the national championship. So that summer, talk about your first experience of summer workouts with Schmitty.
Oh, man. I remember the first day that I came in there, I remember me and Mark Clayton and a bunch of guys were in there together, and MC had never really lifted before. So we went out and started off the workout with just the footwork part, you know, and we thought that was the outside part. So, you know, 30 minutes later, we come back inside to lift and we're like, all right, let's knock this out and get out of here. So we're in there for an hour and I'm like, that was the best part of my workout, but I knew, you know, let's get through this and I'm good. Well, we got through that. All the other guys were hurting. MC had a bar on his chest. He couldn't even get off of him by the end of it because he'd never lifted before. And we go outside and we ran one 300-yard shuttle. And I'd never ran over 200 yards in my life for any reason. So we go out and I'm just kind of casually jogging. I don't know this shit's timed really or how serious they are about it at that point. So I jog down and the guys are starting to pull away, Bubba and all the older guys that are running. And I'm like, uh-oh. And so I start catching up with them a little bit. And when I make my turn to make that last 100 yards, I hear a couple guys yelling, you better make your times, or you're going to have to do this shit again. And that changed things. And so, man, I turned it on and I gave it everything I had, and I got it by like 1 second. And I was like, man, I got this Schmitty stuff. I got the Schmitty stuff. Until Tuesday, the next day we came in, and that was the first day that I ran the ramps. And we ran like six of them or something ungodly like that.
Tell them what ramps we're talking about.
Oh, behind the home bleachers.
The south end zone? Or what used to be the south end zone?
No, the west side, isn't it?
Santee.
Yeah, the west.
The big
concrete ramps.
The ramps that are meant to be walked up with a Coke in your hand and some nachos as you're going to your seat from the concession stand. That's what that's intended for.
Yeah. Yeah, and you're usually going up one or two of them, not all the way to the top, you know, and
with the time
then you're not timed on the way up, and then you're also not timed on the way down. So you got to run up, but you got to jog down. And man, we hit like six of those things, and yeah, I didn't get my times on like the last five of them probably. It was rough. And we came back that afternoon and did it again at 3 o'clock. And I realized then that I wasn't who I thought I was. Schmitty was going to change some things with me and everybody else. So
yeah,
that was my first 2 days of Schmitty experience. And it only got worse from there for the next 5 years.
He's made a lot of guys question their life over and over and over again. Flynn, you came in after Wes, probably what, 6 months after, somewhere in that range or roughly?
Roughly.
Talk about your first. You mentioned it earlier, coaches stations.
So
give it to us.
So I got thrown in the deep end pretty quick. So when I say coaches stations, just to kind of give it a little bit of context for everybody that's listening, basically you just kind of do a warm up as a team. And then each of the assistants and the strength coaches would break up into these different stations. And a lot of it was like change of direction drills, up, downs, jumping out on, you know, old wrestling mats, things like that. Very, very, very cardiovascular, like constant moving and jumping and moving and rolling and all kinds of stuff. Anyways, so I show up fresh out of the box, like ready to go. And we start doing cross field warmups, high knees, duck walks, butt kicks, all this other stuff. In my mind, I'm thinking like, this is a workout.
Yeah.
Little did I know, we were going to do that for like 30 minutes to warm up.
The old dynamic stretch. I'm like,
what is going on here, man? My heart is like about to pound out of my chest. Y'all remember Brad Davis, Hot Sauce? Mm. He's like, he's on me. He's like, bro, you better keep up. Like, he's on me. Like, you know, and y'all know Sauce, he's unique in himself. But anyways, he's with me the whole time. Anyways, we warm up and I'm about to like pass out after warm. He's like, all right, here we go. And they break it up into coach stations. And in coaches stations, it's like, you think you know full speed. Coaches stations are full speed. I mean, you cannot drag on any station, any chance, because what you didn't want to do is you didn't want to screw it up for the whole rest of the group, because then you had to start over or do it again. Anyways, I tell you what, after an hour and a half, like, you talk about questioning my existence, I remember thinking like, I can't believe I made it through that workout. Like, legitimately, I mean, you had guys in there, veterans, that were like still puking, trash cans were everywhere. I mean, some of the guys that, you know, like Wes said, like some of the veteran guys you see that you've seen play, you know, those guys are just, I mean, it's unbelievable, like what we did inside of those stations. And I just remember thinking like, oh my goodness, what have I gotten myself into? You know, and here's the thing. So that feeling never goes away your whole career. I don't care if it's winter workouts, summer workouts. I don't care if it's in the middle of the season. I mean, y'all know on Mondays and Tuesdays, when we do conditioning, everybody's like, oh, geez, what we got today? You know, there's that gut feeling. You didn't want any part of it. And to this day, like, I mean, thinking back on that time, like, that feeling as a senior never went away. Like, you always dreaded show, you know, you didn't want to show up late. You didn't want to, like, it's always full speed. There was no, I mean, if you, what you think is full speed, you got to take it like 10% past that. That's what he expected.
Yeah.
And if you didn't, you screwed it up for everybody.
Oh yeah. Yeah. If you didn't hustle to the next station too, they might just send the whole group back and make everybody go back.
Whole group back, make you run again. Yeah. And you want to know part of that at all, because I mean, you didn't want to be the guy that forces everybody else to do that, you know? But that was the expectation. He never let off the gas ever.
So Chester, for yourself, you're coming in, like we talked about earlier, you know, for, I think one of the things from, at least for myself, getting me through some of those things was like, because I held this program in such high prestige my whole life, it was kind of one of those things like, oh, I have to do this. I have to, you know, but for you coming in as, you know, a California guy, you're coming into this program. Obviously we all, no matter where you come from, you feel the shock of the workouts and what's being asked of you. What was your mindset in those early days of those workouts?
Yeah, no, first off, I take a lot of solace in hearing everyone say, like, it's the most horrible thing they've ever done in their life, physically, right? And none of us have given birth, just to be clear. So, yeah, no,
I mean, that's pretty close. I would assume that that's what it feels like.
That's what second place looks like.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
No comment. But but seriously, hearing you guys talk, there's no workout to prepare anyone for such a thing. You know, it's not a reasonable expectation. There was no high school kid that was prepared to do what we did, right? Going in, especially, right? And it didn't get any better. That being said, I think of all right, so two things come to mind. I got two stories. I'll try to keep these succinct and brief and precise.
Let it flow, man.
All right. So I remember taking my visit to Oklahoma. I think I saw Wes there. He had a good time. It was
always.
It was like, I think you guys just won the Big 12 championship. And you guys were about to play Florida State in the national championship, the BCS championship. Big deal. The energy was great. Everyone's happy. It was nice. I remember I'm like, all right, I'm from California. I've never really been in the cold. I'm in Oklahoma in December, I think. And it was cold. It was like 35 degrees or something like that. There was snow on the ground. I was like, it's cold. You know, it is cold. It's colder than, you know, Huntington Beach, but I'll be all right. You know, I figured I can suck this up. This is not bad. Nobody told me when I came back for summer workouts in July, when I walked off the plane, what humidity was. Nobody mentioned that the entire visit. I was there for 2 days. No one said anything. Not the coaching staff, not the academic department, not the training staff. No one had anything to say about humidity. Like, and that was hurtful. No, I'm just kidding. No, but I do remember walking. I didn't know that water is air was a thing, but that's what humidity was in Oklahoma for the first time for me. Yeah. That was my experience. Yeah, and then secondly, I feel like, and then this is my second. So I wasn't really ready for that. That was a factor I had brought into play when I was like, can I make it here? I didn't think about that in my decision process. I made it and it was good. But the second thing that comes to mind is I feel like I have probably a pretty good percentage of making the times and workouts and getting a lot out of the workouts and making it my entire athletic career. I'm talking from elementary school to my professional career. I feel like I always was able to make workouts and do things. The two times I feel like I couldn't do it were both at Oklahoma. One as the aforementioned ramps. The ramps were the only time I feel like I gave everything and I just couldn't do it. I gave everything I had. I had no regrets, but I just couldn't do it.
But coming, listen, going up is hard, but coming down is no joke. Like it's harder than you think to have a time to make jogging down the ramp or running down the ramp without hurting yourself also.
Yeah, it's one thing to time it going up. It's another thing to time it coming down. And if you don't make it coming down, I mean, that's a whole different mind game.
It's psychological warfare is what it is.
And if you don't think that every single guy here didn't think about jumping at the top of the call, at least
bro, every time. How many times did y'all run up to the south end zone and like up by the scoreboard and you like look over the side like for like a quick second and you're like, man, I could just end it all right here.
Bro, listen, Flynn, I one day we had to make times. We had six stadiums in the south end zone before the renovation. So Sooner fans, if you've been there in the old days, you know, super steep up there, the big Jumbotron we were so proud of. Except for you have a different perspective when you're running up and you have 18 seconds to get from where you're at the bottom to the top and touch the top. And everybody has to make that time. So I remember like Siddiqui one time, I remember making it and I looked over, he touched like 19 and I knew it didn't count. And I was like so crushed that I didn't think about jumping off the top. But dude, we were on number three out of six, and that one didn't count. And I know they weren't going to say, well, you know, we'll run three more and we'll be good. So I remember going back down the bottom. This was one day I had this thought of like, my eyes were so blurry with the sweat. Where in the water that you're talking about, Chester? We're wearing water as an accessory. And I'm so, my vision was so blurry that I literally was like, I might just like trip and fall and like roll down these stairs because I can't really see my next step. And then part of me thought, and this is how sick it was, I thought, is it better to fall and roll down these stairs and maybe get pulled out like honorable discharge from this workout? Or should I just roll the dice and try to make it again?
That's not a healthy relationship with exercise.
It's not healthy. And then there's another day on those same stadiums. I remember convincing myself. I basically convinced myself, I think, looking back on it, that I was having an asthma attack because like the year before I'd been given an inhaler for like allergy related asthma. And I was like convinced I was having one. I was asking Scott for an inhaler. He's like, you don't have asthma. I was like, I need an inhaler. I've had it before. This must be what I'm feeling right now. Oh man, pain, just pain.
I mean the only thing that ever got me were those stadium steps. So much so I don't remember the last one. I remember being walked down the steps and they're like, here, we'll take you down. Like,
that is your mind taking that and like blocking you out from it and protecting you.
Yeah.
For the rest of your life.
Yeah. There's probably a study in psychology over that. But
I ran up the ramp and then I went to Spanish class. Oh. That's what I did. I almost thought my soul left my body and then I went to Spanish.
So, hey, Mesner, I don't know if you remember this. We were staying in the Bud that summer. We were staying at Bud Wilkinson right across the street from the Switzer Center because we were all like, you know, the freshmen, we all just graduated high school. We're there the first week or two. And that first workout was kind of like what Wes said. We did the lift and we got guys throwing up in the weight room just from the lift itself. Like, I remember thinking like, I thought I lifted hard. Like, I thought that was my wheelhouse. Like, I can do the lift. The running, I'm kind of nervous about, but we're in there puking lifting, do the shuttles you're talking about. And then they're like, hey, we're going to take you over to the stadium and show what we expect of you down the road. We ran four that day. And Mez, I don't know if you remember this. We kind of got back in the dorms. We settled in. Russell Munson and I threw up off the second floor. We threw about five Gatorades, just projectiling down. We're leaning over side by side, social distance, vomiting almost in unison. And we make it back to the calf a little bit later. And you were sitting across from us at lunch and you said, man, I don't even know what happened. Like, I was sitting in a chair in my room and I woke up laying in the floor. I don't even remember how I got there.
So it legit. Was actually the shower. I woke up in the shower. I don't know if I needed to throw up or cool down or what. Better both.
Listen, I spent a lot of days in the fetal position in that shower at the Bud dorms. Just
man, if there's one thing I hate just as much as stadiums, was doing like synchronized one leg squats.
The worst.
Oh my God.
Like, y'all remember that?
You gotta touch the knee to the ground or it doesn't count.
What are we doing right now? What is that?
I'm sweating right now. So
the worst one was the 4 600-yard shuttles in the heat of the summer on that damn turf field.
The old school turf that was like 1,000 degrees. Old one.
Yep. Yeah. 4 600s. That's just not right, man.
Not it's like right. cross country.
Yeah.
And these aren't like, and then it's not like 4600s run to completion, which at our age now, I'm like 4600 just sounds like, let's just complete that thing and call it like, hey, that was good. Like, just run hard.
That's it. We got a workout in. Yeah,
just run hard and keep it moving. Nah.
No. Yeah, the best part was halfway through the summer when Coach Ed thought he'd make it easy on us and only run 60 yards 10 times.
Yeah.
And you're so damn tired, you can't keep track of how many times you've ran 60 yards.
What? Anything over 10 reps gets a little, like, questionable for me anyway. It's like, hey, it seems – was it 11? Was it 12?
I hope nobody's counting.
Dude, the one-legged squats were rough. Flynn, did we do those on the box? Is that where we had to touch the knee to the box or touch our knee to the ground when we go down? Or it didn't count when he was on his command?
Oh, yeah. You had a leg back on a box and your other leg forward.
Like
and
a lunge.
You, like, had to go. We had to all go down at the same time, up at the same time.
Yep.
And it was like down, and we had to count. We had to count. Everybody had to count. And it was just like synchronized. And I'm telling you, like, you didn't want to be the dude. Like, I remember Abner Estrada.
Oh, my goodness.
Abner, if you're listening to this podcast, man, we love you.
We love you.
But, man, I remember Abner doing that for the first time. And I remember thinking, like, he was in my station. And I was like, bro, you better not fall out. If you do, like, and he was like wobbling, like doing this. And I'm just like, oh, my goodness, he's going to fall over. The weights are going to fall off. Like, anyways, he didn't. Thank goodness.
He was a freshman?
Yeah, he had just come in. It was like his first summer.
Yeah, no confidence in his ability to complete the workout. Like, you're I guess we're going to run extra.
And the whole time I'm trying to encourage him, like Brandon Everett's walking up to Chris Mesner. Hey, man, good to have you. Like, we love you, man. Let's go. Like, don't, please, God, don't fall over.
Think about me.
Like, please don't, man. But yeah, man, god, miserable.
So was there a more lonely feeling than in the morning in winter workouts, driving to the facility when it's dark outside and the whole campus is sleeping, right? And the season's over, like, season just ended, and you're a long way from, like, at least summer workouts, you're kind of like, hey, you know what, 2 days are coming, we're closer to playing ball. But winter workouts, you're so far from a game. Then it just feels like it's a whole different level of mental torture. It's freezing cold. It's in the dark. You're driving to the facility. And then you get dressed in the locker room, 5 o'clock, 5:15. You want to get there early enough so you're not late. And the only real sound that you hear that between Schmitty saying, like, calling it up, is just, like, people's cleats walking across to the indoor. Nobody really wants to say anything. Yeah, you hear it on the concrete. Nobody wants to talk.
That walk was a nightmare.
Trail
of tears.
It's like in the locker room, it's like a funeral. Like, we're just sitting there.
Just anticipation of fear.
Guys sitting in silence. Guys, like, with their head in their hands. Like the guys praying.
I can't believe what I'm doing.
That would give us so much anxiety. I remember waking up in the middle of the night, being in the bud, and in a dead sprint out the door because I was late for workout.
Yep.
And I get down. Oh, my goodness gracious.
We have the key cards. I'm swiping my key card. I'm pulling as hard as I can on the door. It's not budging. I'm like, this is my worst nightmare. I can't get to my workout. The door's not opening. I finally took a deep breath, went back upstairs, and realized it was 2 o'clock in the morning. And I didn't know whether to go back to sleep or just, like, stay petrified. Like, I didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
Grab a beer.
I got to throw up anyways.
Yeah.
But that anxiety would start. That would start, like, at 10 o'clock. Like, whenever you were finished with dinner and you kind of, like, started getting ready to, like, kind of go to bed, it's like, oh, no. You know, because you set that alarm. You set a few of them so you don't do the oversleep thing. But inevitably, you're your own alarm. We're waking up out of, like, anticipation. You kind of do the quick look. Oh, okay, I got another hour. Oh, I got another 40 minutes. And it's just that whole.
Well, and that was usually too, like, right before we started, like, a section of workout, like, right when we're about to start winter workouts, you had, not only were you had the anxiety, but almost like the anticipation of, like, you didn't want to, like, sleep in on, like, the very first day. Same thing with summertime, same thing with fall camp. There was always kind of that, like, natural, like, I never slept good the first few nights before, like, we would start, like, a section of workouts. Never. Nope. I never slept well.
Yeah.
No. I'd always try to drink as much as I could the night before, just so I know I'd get up and pee two or three times. Because that was the worst feeling in the world, was going to bed, waking up, and having to go do that.
Yeah.
I was like, I'd rather wake up two or three times just to know there's something else. There's something else.
I slept through the last day of winter workouts. That would have been my redshirt freshman year. Killed it the whole week. And I woke up at like 10 o'clock in the morning, and I had eight voicemails, you know, all for Kevin Wilson, are you okay, and all this stuff. And I surprisingly go talk to him. He's like, man, you're doing great. I mean, what happened? I was like, coach, I'm not even gonna lie. Like, I set three alarms and slept through all of them. Like, no excuse. He's like, okay, well, that happens. Go see Schmitty, and, you know, it's all good. All good as I'm concerned. Well, wasn't it good as far as Schmitty was concerned? Because we all know his favorite way to torture us was stair-steppers.
Stairmaster.
Get on that Stairmaster.
Boomer Sooner. 2 hours.
Never lost.
And then a 5-minute break and another hour. And I'll never, ever get on one of those again.
Ever.
Well,
I see people at the gym doing that. I'm like, you're crazy.
No.
I wouldn't even do that. Yep. At their own casual pace, they're usually doing that.
The Stairmaster only gets you one time. Like, you only get that done one time. You never. There's not many repeat offenders on that one. I had it once. Have you seen some?
Yeah. I've seen a couple. There's a couple out there.
Yeah.
There's a couple in the program right now.
Two times for this guy.
Two times for you.
But on the Stairmaster, the first time was actually my freshman year. I think it was an off-season workout where they wanted me at Schmitty. Something happened, and I had to come in that afternoon. And there was a cat in there. He was already on. And Schmitty put me on, and that dude was trying to do the old, I'm going to bump it down and then bump it back up before the
that never works.
Work. Well, Schmitty came over about 10 minutes in and caught him and was like, we got to start it over. And Schmitty started it over, and that guy just looked, that look he had on his face, because he was probably 45 minutes in. And that look he had on his face, he got up on there. He took about 3 steps. And he just hit that red button and said, F this, I'm out.
Yeah.
And I never saw that dude again. out. Gone.
Dude, we were in the Switzer Center one day, and I think at the time it was mostly walk-ons in this group. This is like our first summer. They were basically trying to run off some of the, you know, separate whoever was going to stick around. Well, Dan Townsend was on there, and Dan ended up sticking it out, and he played some fullback for us and all that, but he had shown up late, and he had the hour of Stairmaster while we're all lifting. He jumps on there. We're lifting, and we're probably halfway through the lift. And I hear Schmitty say, hold up. He thought Dan was cheating on the speed, right? So he goes over, he announces, basically proclaims to the whole weight room that if when he checks this thing, if it's not where he said it, we're all going to go out and run gassers. So then Dan looks guilty of sin. I mean, you can just see it all on his face. We know we're screwed. So he takes us all out. Dan cheated. We all go out on the turf field, run 3 600-yard shuttles. Dan has to stand and watch us run them. He doesn't even get to run. He just gets to stand and watch us. We run 3 600-yarders, come back in, finish our lift, and then do all the turf work and then the stadiums after all that. But that was how sinister that Stairmaster was and how serious they took. You don't touch that thing, or there will be consequences, not just for you, but sometimes for everybody else.
Stairmaster would destroy relationships.
And it has.
Your best friend could be up there on the Stairmaster because he showed up late. But as soon as he makes you run 600-yard shuttles, listen, man, I'm dead. He's dead to me.
I don't even care who you are.
Yeah, you miss your times. You're going to lose friends real fast.
100%.
But the thing was, there wasn't like, they didn't discriminate though. This wasn't like, in that case, like Dan's a walk-on, we're going to make an example. No, that was like, it didn't matter who
everybody.
You were. Like, there was nobody safe from that, the ire of that situation.
No, Bob wasn't even safe from Schmitty, man. Nobody was safe.
Bob was...
Schmitty put Bob on the Stairmaster before, you think?
Bob, I guarantee he's checked that thing before. I guarantee you walk over. Wait. Hey, Bob. Hey, what you doing, Bob? But let's just go ahead and bump this up here, Bob.
This is what we do, Big Dog?
Yeah, let's go, Big Dog.
Find a way, Bob. Find a way.
That's how you did it in Iowa, Big Dog?
Just how they did in Youngstown.
Dude, remember when we got the new indoor, which was like bittersweet because like we're never gonna have, like, I remember my first year we got practice let short in the 2 days because we had lightning, and we're like, oh, this is kind of amazing, you know, we got to cut short, got to go back to the dorm. But the indoor like ended all of that. Got this brand new facility, and there was like, I remember distinctly, we're doing the partner med ball sit-ups, which were brutal, right? And if one person drops the ball, like, we're all in trouble. But Dusty Dvoracek was doing the med ball sit-ups, and at some point in our set of 100, one of our sets of 100, he turns, he comes up, throws it to whoever it was, and he turns and pukes. He pukes on the side, and he was on the end of the row, and Schmitty was like literally like 6 feet away, and I happened to be like kind of I raised up and looked over that way, right as Dusty's ralphing. And Schmitty like kicks the crap out of him, like as hard as he could, like kicked him in the thigh. He's like, "Don't you ever effing throw up on my turf again?" Also, I'm like, "Noted. I will never throw up on this turf, like ever." Fast forward like 2 weeks later, we're running hundreds. We're running like 1,200s.
I love this story. I love it.
So we're running like 1,200s, and about halfway through, they're like, "Hey, you guys, like, just walk to the 50 and back. You know, get your drink, walk to the 50, walk back. We got, you know, however many more." So it's kind of like a halfway point. Well, I walk out to the logo, and I'm like, I got to throw up, and there's nowhere to go. And there's no trash can available, and I'm like, I got no choice. So the only thing that made sense to me, we had those crappy gray cotton Nike shirts that shrinked up in the wash. I pulled it out a little bit, and I just literally leaned down, like, puked all in my shirt. I, like, held it so it would catch all my throw up in the shirt. And that was like the rationale I had was like, it's better to puke all over myself than to let it hit the turf, because I saw what happened to Dusty. They might take me and just like throw me off the top of the stadium, if for all I know.
So, after making you run six of them.
Yeah, they made me finish the workout first, but then they would probably just maybe kill me. I don't know.
You saw it in the Dusty.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I was rooted. They made a believer out of me. But the best part was
the first year they got that turf. If they caught you spitting on it, they
spitting on it, you were in trouble, boy.
And then after that, they were like, all right. And then like 2 years later, we're blowing snot rockets on it. And they're like, that guy will come sanitize it. It's all right.
Well, the best part about it was there was a guy that was working out with us that winter that was trying to walk on. And that was like his only semester in the program, but he was there that day and he saw me do that. And he ends up marrying a girl from my hometown. And like years later, she's like, "Hey, you know, my husband was telling me something. Did you throw up on yourself at the indoor facility?" I'm like, "Really? Like, that's what I'm like, that made it out of there. Like, how is that even a thing?" But okay. But now
that's
here,
we're done, huh?
Yeah. Now we'll share it on the podcast. It's all, you know, years later, it's funny, but at the time it was a little traumatizing.
Here's my question. Do you guys still remember somebody that you absolutely would not partner up with to do med ball sit ups?
Yes.
Yeah.
For sure.
I got about to name two of them.
Yeah, right. I'll name a coach at OU right now.
Yeah, well, that's the one I was thinking. I don't know if I can say it.
I was going to say it.
Dude, hey, that's easy. Who popped into my mind.
That's the number one, right? The number one draft pick? The number one.
Oh, man.
There's a certain Anton, man.
Never Anton, never Abner.
Yeah,
they were habitual line steppers.
Habitual.
Big C.
Give me Brent Rail, because he could randomly crush some med ball setups. That was like his deal. And I was like, give me some Rail.
Davin and I had a mutual agreement. Like, we would always find each other because, like, we had a
Davin would just hand you the ball because his arms were.
Well, his arms are the length of my body.
Place it on your.
Hold this, Flynn.
That's right.
He's currently laughing. He doesn't know it.
Listen, Davin Joseph go on being all pro, of course, and everything. But when we would do the dips, we were like literally like curling each other, grabbing the ankles. You're crossing your ankles on a dip. We're spotting each other, and we're like curling each other up, right? And Davin and I, we literally like got through dips. We were partners on dips all the time. And I remember like basically just like whatever 320 he was weighing. I just felt like I was picking him up every dip, and then he returned the favor. But man. The dip,
or the pull ups.
Might as well.
Oh, pull ups.
Get out of here.
The worst.
Like we're doing pull ups on our own. Like what kind of world were we living in?
Man, I remember having a whole mez one time on a pull up. Maz, your legs are so big and heavy. I was like, Maz, you got to start pulling yourself up, man. Like, I'm
he leaned all in on
him. I'm just trying to find a way.
His comment.
Hey, Chester. And Maz, he would straighten his legs. I'm like, bro, I can't hold your legs when they're straight. I'm gripping his waist.
Mesner's like, hot, man. Heavy, sweaty, hairy legs just all over you.
It is all legs. Some long legs.
Oh, my goodness.
Just find a way.
Man. Get it done.
And we're going to leave it right here for this episode of the Players Lounge. We continue this conversation. We got more to come next week. We'll bring you the second half of our conversation at a later date. But we hope you enjoyed this first edition of the Players Lounge. Let us know. Hit us up with some DMs. Tweet at us. Let us know what you think. I certainly had a good time with my former teammates, catching up and sharing some old stories and sharing some laughs and looking back on a career that was a lot of fun, a lot of work, but ultimately led to a lot of great memories. And so thanks for hanging in there with us. Be sure to go and subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Leave us a rating, write us a review. We'd love to hear from you guys, get the feedback. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Sooners. Find our Facebook page and join that as well, Locked On Sooners Podcast. And until next time, for my friends, my former teammates, John Flynn, Wes Sims, Chris Chester, Chris Messner, I'm David Walker. We'll see you tomorrow. Boomer Sooner.